Tim Bauer. Today's show is an ongoing series that explores Richmond's thriving art scene and the people that make it happen. Every Friday at 12:30, we sit down at a Richmond cafe and have lunch with one of these artists. Conversation is live and spontaneous, so pull up a chair and meet some fascinating people. Today we're talking with Steve Glass. Steve has been the resident potter at the Virginia Museum of Fine Arts since 1982. He has lectured and exhibited internationally. Most recently, solo exhibitions have been in Seoul, Korea, and London. His works and essays have appeared in numerous publications. Welcome, Steve, to Zero Hour, and thanks again for joining us.
My pleasure entirely.
Okay, I'm going to start out by insulting you, which is usually always a good way to get people talking. When I think of pottery, right, I think of a lump of clay, okay? And I think, how in the world does someone build their, what's the French for saying reason for life?
Raison d'être.
Yeah. How does, so raison d'être. How does someone build, how do you build a life around a lump of clay? And what I was thinking about sort of calling this show, based on some of your work that'll give you some ideas to where I'm headed with this, are four words, sort of. One is, or two are actually, chance versus control, and tradition versus innovation. But I think the people that are listening, you know, they think of a pot, and they think of, how in the world does an intelligent human being spend their entire life, you know, making clay pots? And not that we, you know, need to answer that, but what I'd like to do is dig down, because there's a lot more going on there than that,
right,
that I think some people who are familiar with ceramics and pottery maybe understand, and others just sort of look at it. And it's interesting, because it's a mix. I mean, there is a utilitarian side, too. You could be making a cookie jar that is a piece of art.
That's right.
You know, which is kind of interesting. So let's talk about that a little bit. I think in your career, from what I know about it, you've sort of, I don't know if struggled's too strong a word, but you certainly have investigated traditional approaches to pottery and to making pottery versus sort of more experimental, cutting edge, you know, what the market kind of wants approach. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, the art experience is what we are talking about. And the art experience can occur looking at sculpture, looking at painting, or looking at pottery and handling pottery. The big difference between painting and sculpture and most ceramic art is its domestic scale. I mean, you can actually pick it up, hold it, examine it, the weight of it. There are aesthetic concerns that are involved in ceramic art that aren't issues at all in painting and sculpture most of the time.
Right.
And it's that part of it that interests me.
That aesthetic part of it in terms
well,
of...
Well, it's the whole notion of making something beautiful,
yeah,
to look at,
right,
and that's useful as well. And the whole notion of modern art, not contemporary art necessarily,
right,
but modern art, was to have an impact on people's lives. It wasn't art for art's sake,
right,
in the beginning. We are going to make this planet a better place to live.
Mm-hmm.
That's what artists were about.
What time period are you talking about?
I'm thinking about the early 30s and 40s.
Okay.
And into the 50s. But certainly
would
not.
Would you say political then? More political? Or
well, not
or no?
not really
no?
political. And well, Dada was very political. But, I mean, if you spend your whole life making things for the sake of making them, for their avant-garde value,
right,
for their flash value,
right, for their sale value,
there's a great book called The Transformative Vision, where Jose Aguiles realizes that for him, he was a painter,
uh-huh,
that art was really just fashion after a while, because things, people were moving from minimalism to pop to all this stuff really, really fast. And he just had this enlightenment that this is really just a joke, and went on to study art history.
That's very interesting. I mean, that's very interesting, because, you know, I think many people who don't or aren't in the arts also have that or can have that sense that, you know, like you said, this is a joke. And yet you're saying someone who looked at it seriously, it kind of reminds me, it's sort of, you know what it reminds me of? It's funny. You know, the information just came out about Mother Teresa,
yes.
The saint Mother Teresa, the earthly version of God, Mother Teresa, who was steeped in doubt.
Yeah.
I often don't think there's that far away from that in the arts.
Yeah.
Do you know?
I mean, is it
ridiculous or is it, is there a God or isn't there a God? Is there an art or, you know?
Any theologian worth his salt, that's most of the time.
You think that's true in the arts?
And I think in the arts, it's true too.
Yeah.
There's a whole lot of rhetoric in the art world.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not what, you know, I look at most of the time or think about most of the time.
We're just going to take a little bit of a break here and remind you that you're listening to WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond's Indie Radio. It's radio for the rest of us. And we're talking to Steve Glass. Steve is a ceramicist and a potter who was shown nationally and internationally. And we're talking about his experience, life experience, in the creation of ceramic objects. Well, let's get back to this thing of traditional versus experimental, because from the information I've read about your work, those seem to be two very important issues that still continue to sort of tug at you. So the traditional, and when I was reading, and I hope I'm not putting words in your mouth, but from the traditional, it almost seemed as though you were looking at it from a Zen point of view. In other words, why would, I don't know if anybody's ever, if there is such a thing as a Zen archer, but, you know, why would someone, you know, shoot at a target for years and years and years until they can do it, you know, sort of with their eyes shut.
Right.
It's sort of the difference between an inch deep and a mile wide and drilling down. And it sounds like what you're trying to do is drill down in your traditional work.
Mm-hmm.
Is that, am I getting close to what goes on there?
That's an interesting image. I mean, the one thing about Zen and the art of archery, there was a German philosopher whose name escapes me at this point, but went to Japan to study, to figure out how these people were arriving at enlightenment from a completely different structure. And he was taking classes with a Zen master, and he was watching these really thin, small Japanese men pull these incredibly strong, difficult bows to shoot, and they were getting bullseyes. They were doing very, very well. He couldn't even pull the bow back. He just couldn't do
it. Right.
And he worked with this guy for months and months and months, and it was just time for holiday, and the Zen master said, you know, don't take your bow with you when you leave to. Well, this guy did, and he practiced day and night.
Mm-hmm.
And he was shamed by, you know, his master could tell he'd been practicing. But he still wasn't doing very well.
Right.
And the Zen master shunned him for weeks. And finally, he spoke to the German philosopher and said, you need to concentrate on breathing. And the German guy said, well, why didn't you tell me that in the first place?
Right.
And he said, if I told you in the first place, you wouldn't have considered it important.
Right, exactly.
And, you know, when you're making pottery and you look at your influences, a good teacher pays attention to what you're doing but doesn't say too much.
Right.
In the beginning, you have to learn how to make a pot. You know,
allowing someone to discover instead of showing them or leading them.
Yeah. I mean, my beginning students at the museum, I have to be real directive. But, you know, after 3 or 4 years, I just look around and watch what they're doing and make suggestions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, well, maybe you ought to go home and Google so-and-so or look up this. Or, you know, here's considered that. And to me, the big challenge is to, if you're firing pieces, sell it on, for instance, sell it on glazes are very traditional. If you're making a traditional Asian style water jar and you're glazing it in Celadon, you know, it's
glazing it in one
Celadon glaze and firing it in a wood kiln, you know, the jade gray green.
But that gets into your work, the difference between you know, control and less control, which is sort of another kind of very interesting issue. What I'm getting back to here is, why does someone take
a
blob of clay? What is this about? And all of a sudden we're talking about, you know, Zen philosophy and breathing and insight and the difference
leads
between
to those things.
Yes.
It really does. I mean,
yeah, that's where I'm trying to
When you go into a pottery class, it can be a transformative experience for many, many people. And it can continue to be one if you're really serious about it. But I've watched people's lives be changed by this.
Really?
I mean, people who were limited in scope and vision about life in general be transformed by it.
Talk about that some more. I mean,
People who live very middle-class lives, who may have, I'm thinking of students over the years, since we're living in Richmond, Virginia, have children that went to St. Christopher's and grew up and went to the University of Richmond, and they did the same thing. That's a fairly limited worldview.
Right.
Come to pottery class and find something so completely different. Experience the sort of the...
A whole different way of thinking about their life. Yeah, a different way of thinking about their life experience, about what is important to... I mean, we have limited time and limited energy. And, you know, like we were talking about before the show, you know, if you just... Some people say my best ideas come to me in the shower.
Right.
You could almost say my best ideas come to me when I'm sitting around a wheel. Yep. I mean, is that kind of what we're getting at here?
Well, we're getting it with people that would never have considered, for instance, going to the Penland School of Crafts for 2 weeks.
Right.
Away from their family.
Mm-hmm.
Away from all accustomed, you know, behavior patterns. And then coming back, realizing that there's a completely different world out there. That people think, breathe, and talk about pots.
Yeah.
You know, so what an unusual thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what potters do. I mean, that's what people in clay do. They talk about pots and shape and color and form and what does it mean and why do you do it this way? Why do you fire to 2,500 degrees? Isn't that awfully high? What happens at that point? Why does that make you happy and fulfilled? And in a philosophical sense, you feel full.
Why?
Because it does. It just does.
It transcends language.
And these may be people who were mostly interested in tennis, golf, and riding horses.
Yeah, well, don't you think you can find the same thing in golf?
Some people say that.
Yeah,
some
I know.
You think anything investigated.
You look at it from the outside and you think, okay, you got a bag of clubs, you got an impossible game. You know, you hit this ball, but if you talk to someone who's really into it, you know, there are like, you know, levels upon levels upon levels upon levels upon levels of. But it's funny, in our culture, we look at it as, why would someone spend their lives with a blob of clay?
Right.
But someone says, I play golf and I'm really into it and I do it 3 times a week, you go, okay.
Right. That's acceptable, isn't it?
That's sort of an acceptable.
There's a whole social structure around playing golf.
Right.
That. Supports in people's expectations.
I mean, I've heard people say, I can tell how someone handles life by watching how they play golf.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which is, whether it's true or not, I don't know, but it certainly is saying there's a lot more to it than just hitting the ball.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And there's a lot more to it than just, you know, making the thing into a bowl.
Well, you know, a sport requires discipline, no matter what the sport is.
Right.
And if you're going to learn how to make pots, the first lesson is discipline.
Mm-hmm.
You have to learn how to do this, and you have to do it thousands of times.
Right.
You know, to make a decent. I always tell students, you know, their first 3,000 pots are, you know, just practice.
Right. Yeah. So don't worry about them too much.
No.
And then after that, you tell them that it's about breathing.
Yeah, that's later. That's 3,000 pots later.
Stop holding your breath.
Right.
You're going to die. We're just going to take a little bit of a break here and remind you that you're listening to WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond's Indie Radio. It's radio for the rest of us. And we're talking to Steve Glass. Steve is a ceramicist and a potter who's shown nationally and internationally. And we're talking about his experience, life experience, in the creation of ceramic objects. Well, you said something interesting, something I read. You said that, you know, that your work is sometimes simple with a sense of purpose, and you sort of made the analogy between Bob Dylan's sort of raw music and the overproduced stuff we hear now coming out of Nashville. Talk about that in terms of how you approach your work, the philosophy of your work.
Well,
the philosophy of your mud.
Mud philosophy.
Your mud philosophy.
There is a, I know this is true from speaking to a lot of ceramic artists. There is in your mind's eye, there's this look and feel that you're looking for years and years and years.
Really?
Right,
that's interesting. Yeah.
It's there, uh-huh. But you never really get there.
Okay.
But
it is a journey and a search.
It is a journey and a search. But every now and then, if you're lucky, uh-huh. and you pay very close attention, and you put the pot in the right spot in the kiln, it will produce a pot, one out of 100.
Right.
That you go, that's what I was looking for. This is what speaks to me. This is what makes time stop. This is what the art experience is about.
Mm-hmm.
And
makes time stop because it achieves a certain dramatic, I don't know, complex simplicity. What?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it isn't verbal. It achieves whatever that. Unattainable is.
If I were an art critic, I'd be able to explain it.
Yeah, well, let's skip that.
But that's why we have art critics, and that's why they're so important.
Right, that's right. They really are. And the average person reads them avidly. You know, I do.
Well, you know.
No, they are important.
For the longest time, I used to fight the notion that the issue surrounding the object was more important than the object itself. And that is, of course, a classic art.
The issue surrounding the object is more important than the object itself.
Because the reason that art critics and art historians have to believe that,
right,
is because without some explanation of what these things are,
right, in some context, there's not much for them to talk about.
What,
I mean, that would be basically reduced to pictures, wouldn't it?
Well, it would be like. Why is this important?
Art historians would be photographers. Here's a nice one I found. Look at this.
But, you know, the object itself, I mean, one person explained it to me, well, that's because you make objects and they make issues.
I don't know. You know, I think you make both.
Well,
I think you make objects out of issues. And you make issues out of objects. I mean, it's not as though an art historian could be writing art critic couldn't be writing about nothing.
Right.
I mean, it really is integral. And I think that, I don't want to get off on this because this certainly isn't what we're talking about. But I mean, one certainly doesn't exist without the other.
No.
And vice versa.
Right.
And so, you know, what is it, chicken or egg? You know, is it art theory first and then art, or art?
I think they're both fascinating.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
I love to read about art theory, and I love looking at art.
Well, let's talk about something that I think everybody can relate to, and that is the difference between minimal and sort of maximal control. And in our lives, if we're asleep, which many of us are for a long time, I include myself in that category, you don't really realize how much of life is really out of your control,
mm-hmm.
and how much of life is in your control. As a matter of fact, many of us drive ourselves crazy trying to control everything in our lives. But the truth of it is that life is parts are controlled and parts aren't. Now, getting back to my reference to mud, isn't mm-hmm. it interesting that you explore that through pottery? Talk about that. I mean, how do you explore something so integral to all of our lives through your work?
Well, I do it in two different ways. I have two different types of work. One is fired in electricity, and one is fired in wood.
Electric, I mean electric
an
kiln.
Electric kiln.
I mean, because all of a sudden I've got a Frankenstein image going on here.
No. They fired
it's it. Alive! It's alive! Okay, I'm back.
Well, actually, that is what I'm trying to do.
Yeah, I know. So we finally got to the core of it, eh? Dr. Frankenstein.
And in an electric kiln, the big difference for those of you out there that have experienced this, in an electric kiln, nothing happens except an increase in heat.
Right.
There's no atmospheric change in the kiln. Salt isn't introduced. Wood isn't introduced. And wood and salt and all the
and things, smoke and carbon.
Exactly. And, yeah. That has such an impact on clay and the glaze and the entire process. When you're doing this in electricity, the artist has to do all of it.
Right.
So all of this, you know, what I'm trying to do is encode these pieces with so much energy that when it's final and you look at it, it is something that you're going to want to look at.
And it is what you conceptualized. I mean, you very rarely open an electric kiln and go, whoa, look at this.
I didn't anticipate that.
How did that happen?
No, exactly.
Yeah, that's interesting. Do you see that as more painterly?
Painting has a lot to do with my process in particular.
With the electric kiln?
Yes.
Okay.
Because
you're dealing with abstract imagery and...
Right.
It's just the surface happens to be a pot.
Much more painterly than what I do in the country.
Right.
And that's a more controlled environment.
Mm-hmm.
I am very aware of what I'm doing. And I spend much more time on those pieces than I do in the wood firing, except
right.
for... It takes, you know, 24 hours for 5 or 6 days. I mean, there's a lot of labor that goes into the wood firing
right.
and a lot of other decisions. But I do allow for the flashing, the ash, and all the atmospherics in the wood firing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have very little control over that.
Right.
In the electric kiln, I have much more control. And the relationship between... a pot that I'm working on that's going into the electric kiln and then one that goes into the wood kiln is very different too, because I'm constantly coming back to the pieces that go into the electric kiln and responding to them over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
I paint them, then I paint them again, then I paint them again, then I fire them, then I glaze them, and I glaze them in such a way to maximize
mm-hmm.
The minimal amount of control that I have over the pieces.
Yeah, interesting.
But both are very satisfying to me, and I can't imagine doing one or the other completely or solely. Although it may happen one day. At this point,
yeah,
I'm very content to go back and forth between the two.
Yeah, it's nice that you have those.
I mean, it's not... Quite.
Like, I mean, painters will talk about mistakes, you know, especially abstract painters will talk about mistakes on a canvas, you know, the classic thing, you know, is a drip, you know, and
right.
abstract expressionists, you know, somebody said, well, there's a drip on there,
right.
you know, and sort of the answer was, and? There's a drip on life, too, you know.
Right.
That's what this is about here, guys. You know, it's not all about control. It's about a new way of looking at your experience of reality, or what, or your, not even your experience of what reality is really about, i.e. chaos theory, which is about as much as I know about that, but anyway. Where do you think you're headed with your work? Are you showing anything currently? Are you...
I've got a show coming up with 14 other people at Cork Gallery in October.
Where is that?
October 4th, 5th, and 6th. And Cork Gallery is on Broad Street right next to 1708.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
644-5450. Yeah, yeah.
Or in New Jersey, all 212.
And
right.
And Katie Ucrop do a real good job down there. And what was the question again?
Oh, just where you know what you're headed to, what your work is about. But I think we've pretty well hit. How why would a grown, smart, perceptive, well-educated, well-traveled, well-experienced man want to spend his days in playing with mud? And I think we've kind of gotten at that, because that's where I think a lot of people come from. You know, they look at this and they go, pottery? What? That's where you put cookies, right?
Right. It's a much more complicated thing than that.
Although you can put cookies in them.
Yes, you can. You know, so much of contemporary
art... We could call this show Much More Than Cookie Jars.
You could. More Than a Mug.
More Than a Mug. That's good. I like it. More Than a Mug. All right. Well, listen, speaking of more than a mug, this mug is out of time. And this has been fascinating. It's been a fascinating sort of journey into understanding, how in our culture... someone can be attracted to something that looks so utilitarian and really make it a journey and a life experience and an education and a way to understand their own existence and to explore that, through making pottery, so ceramic work. So thank you very much.
And thanks for inviting
me. For the work that you do in the community. And thanks for you folks for listening. We hope to see you again for lunch again on the radio next Friday at 12:30. Once again, this is Tim Bowring, and you're listening to WRIR 97.3 FM. It's Richmond's indie radio. It's radio for the rest of us.